Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, it's Trent here, and it is so wonderful to have you company today for episode 349.2.
Who would have thought it?
As we draw ever closer to the 350. This week on the show, we're going to do a vintage versus modern toy comparison of some very diverse toys where we pit the old vintage against the new modern newfangled thingamabob and see how they stack up. And then we jump into X-Men 97 thoughts so far, getting good reviews on the Rotten Tomatoes, etc.
Oh, fantastic.
Today it is Ben.
Yep, it's me, myself and I again. G'day.
Ben and Trent show once more. All right, so let's kick this off. This was your idea, Ben, to do a bit of a comparison.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think of it like we get so excited about our beloved toy lines, our 80s and you know, sometimes 90s toy lines that get a rehash, that get a redo, that get a reinvention. You know, last week I was at JB Hi-Fi and I picked up the 40th anniversary reissue of Soundwave. And, you know, I've got the masterpiece, which is sort of the king of the hill of modern interpretations of Soundwave in, you know, deluxe form and things. But the reason I got so excited about this reissue of Soundwave is he's in cartoon accurate colors. So it's the exact same mold as you would have seen the, you know, Hasbro's 1984 version and things. But this one's got red, you know, visor. Yep. He's got very dull gray arms and things and legs. He's got extra paint apps where, you know, they weren't apparent on the original. Mm-hmm. Just little subtle details that a crazy fan like me gets hyped for. And I thought about it. I put it back, and then I went back and bought it. Nice. I'm like, you know, I have to take him home. He is, after all, my favorite. And I you know, cranked him out. I opened him pretty quickly. Came with Ravage and Laserbeak, so not one cassette but two. And they were also in cartoon color schemes and things. You know, the dull gray for Ravage and things comes with the big Decepticon logo on his sort of shoulder blade and stuff. Just really cool toys, even though they're still in that basic, style and stuff. And it's a cool cartoon representation on my shelf without paying the third party, you know, price tag for the masterpiece versions and things that I know a lot of companies do. Mm-hmm. I love that vintage G1 style, and that's what my collection is. And to have a now, you know, regular toy version and now cartoon version color scheme in my collection just makes me happy.
Yeah.
So I thought, why not? Why do we get so excited? You know, there's my explanation of why I get so excited about a Soundwave toy, but why do we get so excited for new, you know, versions of toys? You know, is it extra paint apps? Is it extra articulation? Is it details that we haven't ever seen? You know, Super 7 Turtles for a while were doing fantastic work with things like, you know, Muckman and things, you know, highly rated Slash and stuff, absolutely phenomenal. What's his name? The one that Frank just recently
Wingnut
and Screwloose.
Yeah.
They are just, you know, figures of the year in his opinion, and I can 100% see why. Why do we get excited about these? So this was my little idea segment of let's bring a toy to the show, the vintage version, and then their modern interpretation counterpart, and sort of dissect on what makes these, what makes the vintage one so cool, but what makes the modern version, you know, that much better, or, you know, what makes it appealing, you know, to spend our money on.
So. Yeah. No, great idea. I loved the idea as soon as you pitched it, and I got so excited going into my toy room. Yeah. I couldn't choose.
Yeah.
So I ended up picking three different evolutions of toys.
Yes.
And in a couple of cases, I've got a few, not just the modern and the vintage. I've got, like, the kind of mid-range, yeah, and that's going to be interesting to have a look 100%. At how that all works. I thought I'd kick off with something that's very relevant with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire hitting cinemas this last week, and a lot of fans really enjoying that. The Yes Have Some guys were on the red carpet doing all the interviews and hosting parties at
good
Irish
on
clubs.
Them. Like, I loved
hearing that story.
Yeah, that good on them. I cannot wait to see. I'm actually, you know, past tense. I will have seen the movie by the time this episode is released. But right now I can't talk about it because I haven't actually seen it in real time. But yeah, taking my family, I'm uber hyped. I'm super hyped to see it. Fresh has just seen it. Yep. A couple of the Patreons have already, you know, said they've put their shout out to BC Talk.
The
whole family got in the flight suits and wore it. I mean, that's just, you know, next level. Mad respect. I love that these, you know, family movies are getting this much hype and everyone's, you know, getting dressed up and stuff. So, yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah. So I chose one of my favorite figures from the real Ghostbusters line, which, and this is going to be a bit of an interesting analysis because we're going to toggle. We're talking about Slimer, or as he was released here in this very first version of Slimer, Green Ghost. And I've got two retro versions, two vintage versions of Slimer here, because I think the Fright Features one does the comparison a little bit better. But here he is. Here's the first version of Green Ghost. Now, back in the day, Ghostbusters was a huge hit. Like, it was a cultural phenomenon, the movie. I was a massive fan. A little bit young to see Ghostbusters 1 at the cinema, but saw Ghostbusters 2 at the cinema. Always a big Ghostbusters fan. Had a lot of the toys. But always found the toys really odd, that they never quite looked like the movie.
Yes.
And that was deliberate, because they weren't based on the movie. Yes. They were based on the animated Real Ghostbusters television show. But anyway, what we've got here is one of my favorite characters was Slimer, and I think they did a fantastic job of making him into a cartoon representation of him. He's kind of like a bit menacing. You know, he's cartoony, but he's got a kind of angry looking face, and not really brilliantly articulated, but his arms move and he's got some sort of like tail articulation, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, you can articulate tail to it pointing downwards or upwards. But I just think he's in this version, he shines through a lot of character.
Yes.
Like, he is a ghost. He's going to scare people. He's got his mouth open, tongue out, sees tonsils and everything. He's, you know, his purpose is a ghost. He's definitely showcasing, I am a ghost and I'm here to scare people.
Yes.
So I think he's, you know, tick that box for he's doing right.
Yes. Then we've got the next version of Slimer that was released.
So was this actually called Slimer or the Green Ghost?
I think it's still, in fact, it may have had two different names.
Right.
He may have been Slimer at this point, but we all know him as Slimer.
Yes.
And this is where he's actually working with the Ghostbusters. Yes. So he's got a little Ghostbusters logo there on his arm.
Because in the cartoon, he actually became so famous. There was whole seasons where it was Slimer and the real Ghostbusters almost. And I find that fascinating that he became that famous that they, you know, Orko would never have a season dedicated. Snarf would never, you know, you could go through all the cartoons and rattle the joke parody character, you know, and none of them got that praise, but Slimer shone through.
Slimer did. I think he's much loved as a sort of character. And I don't have the proton pack for this Fright Features Slimer, but I love him. He was a must have as a kid. I always loved Fright Features. And he's no exception. You can hear the sound of him opening his mouth and jabbering out his eyes. And I think he's great.
Fantastic action figure. And this more looks like what we saw in the movie.
Yes.
Sort of, he doesn't have that long tail anymore. He's more compressed.
Yep.
He's more, the cartoon. He's more, you know, appealing, like visually.
Yes.
You know, he's more and things. But, with the action feature and stuff, he does look scary and stuff. But I love the emblem. The emblem just you know, solidifies how cool and what toy lines. It's like having Ninja Turtles in the back of
That's
April's
right.
jacket.
Yes, exactly.
You know, or Ace Duck or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's super cool. And then, and there's been a few different versions of Slimer. We've had, you know, the Mattel movie line yep. that they did, and they'd some of those would come with pack-in ghosts and there'd be Slimers in there. But I think the best version of Slimer that has been released today in modern times is one that's from a pretty obscure line that came out by NECA.
Yes.
And this was a line that didn't give us the Ghostbusters. We got like...
Terror Dogs.
We got the Terror Dogs. We got Zool.
Yes.
And
Stay Puffed Marshmallow.
Stay Puffed Marshmallow yep. and Slimer. And Slimer was fantastic because he came with a whole heap of those accessories, right. which I don't have with him. I've got them somewhere, but I've got no idea where they are. But he came with like the wine bottle and,
yes.
and a turkey, like a chicken. Yep. And you could remove the drumsticks and nice. All these really like yeah. cool food snacks. I guess to say as well, shout out to the original Slimer that came with like food. Like a chop, like a meat, slab of meat. And
Watermelon.
Yeah. yeah, that sort of thing.
Yep.
But here we have now, and this was when I got him. I think this line was sort of like an early to mid-2000 yeah. line, yep. right? And... He's a movie replica,
yep.
right? So now we're diving into something that is, for the first time in my collection, getting a movie version of what he looks like. He's weirdly articulated, like his head moves, but it doesn't make sense in any other position because it really breaks up the sculpt. And his arms are, again, you know, articulated. He's got wrist articulation. But what's really, really cool this time and what they've nailed is he's got a flight stand.
Yep.
And it's kind of...
slime stand.
Yeah, it's slime. It's transparent.
Yep.
It's gooey looking. And it plugs into his butt. He's actually got a butt.
Like, oh, nice.
They've actually sculpted yes. the buttocks.
Yes.
So it's really, like, for the first time, I remember getting this thing and going, he's actually really grotesque.
Yes.
These huge, like, this mouth and these beady, like, human eyes. And, you know, he's just a ball of, you know, blob.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's an absolutely amazing replica of the movie version, which I loved. And this is such an interesting dynamic because during the mid-2000s, this is what was missing from my collection, was a movie representation of the, you know, the character I loved from the movie. And it filled a big... void in the collection. And I sort of look at it now and I go, well, if I could have one version, what would it be? And if I had to pick, it's Fright Features Slimer. Just
nice.
Because,
okay.
you know, it's nostalgic. It takes me back to my childhood. As much as I love the sculpting detail and the paint applications on that NECA version, it's probably not my favorite, right? But it is such a cool... representation to have. And I think this is sort of the evolution that we've had is as sculpting techniques got better and as paint applications got better and as kind of collectors were adults, this is what they wanted. I would sort of almost now argue that, you know, with Street Sharks, we're not getting hyper movie realistic
no,
version of Street Sharks.
No. We don't want hyper, no, that's you know, right. that would look ridiculous. That would look like King Sharks and, you know, King Sharks buddies.
Yeah,
like, you
yeah.
know, just, I don't think it'd look real. I've seen AI versions of realistic sharks and yeah. they just don't work.
Doesn't have the magic,
yeah.
right?
No,
it doesn't
no.
have the nostalgia.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, agreed. This is great. And also, Slimer, this sort of NECA Slimer has a rubbery type head, so you can open and close his mouth by putting force on top,
yep.
top of his head, which is a cool little gimmick without adding action features and things, but it just adds to that realism. The tongue and things is almost looks like it's wet
yeah.
by the
it's got a sheen on the paint,
yeah,
doesn't it,
by
it's...
the fact that they have given the paint. Now Jared from Yes Have Some podcast is very critical of Slimers.
Yep.
Do you rate this as one of the better movie accurates?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
I think if I look back to kind of with the new movies, they've done different versions of Slimers. Again, they've done them in the more kind of kid-friendly
yep.
style. This it almost looks like a mini prop, I'd say.
Yeah.
It's that kind of level of realism. In terms of the sculpt, in terms of the paint, the way they've done the paint apps, it's very meticulously painted.
Yeah.
with the gradient. I think if you lined that next to the puppet,
yes,
it would be a very, very close representation. I have to admit, I reckon that is the best modern version of Slimer today. That you'll get.
Yeah. I got to shout out one Slimer, the only one and only Slimer that in my collection will, you know, my journey through the kids and things, and that's from the Afterlife collection, and that's the one, the Fright Features, where he opens up just like that grandma did, and it folds out and all his guts and things come out. That's the one that we have in our collection from only a couple of years back, and that is a fantastic Slimer, you know, just the transformation, you know, of Fright Feature to a regular looking version. So yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, I love this. Love the phase through the journey that we have. Very cool. All right, what I bought, I was even though this was my idea, I was looking at my toy collection and thinking, all I could think is Masters, right? Bring Masters. I'm like, no, everyone's going to expect I bring Masters. What have I got that's something a little bit left of, you know, field that I don't usually talk about, or we don't even talk about very often on the podcast. So I went with the Kenner Terminator 2 line. And so this is Power Arm Terminator. So if you can close your eyes and imagine what this Power Arm Terminator looks like, he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger does when he's got, you know, after a few beatings and things. So he's got only half a face.
Yep.
Very bulky style in the Kenner form. And he's got a removable left arm that you can change from a regular arm that's got, you know, a bit of battle damage and things. And you can put this, what they call the Power Arm on. And there's two Power Arms in this collection. One is a massive sort of missile launching, you know, with action feature. You can spring loaded and shoot the missile, or you can have sort of this Power Claw Arm. And the also, because it's 90s, he's got this big gun, bracelet that goes around his shoulders to his, you know, waist type thing. But his T-shirt underneath is like a bright pink. It's the brightest pink shirt you've ever seen on this, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger physique.
Tough guy,
it's just hilarious, right? So how could they one-up this? Well, introduced, you know, come 20-odd years later, or maybe not, 15 years later, NECA. NECA have a go at this. Yep. So they've just created the movie realistic NECA toy line of Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator, and they've just grabbed one of their figures and painted one of the figures with a vest on, with a pink chest, given him a removable arm so you can add on the Power Arm addition, and then instead of having a different arm for the claw, you can just take out the missile and put the claw on, which is pretty clever. And you also get a regular arm, but it's got no battle damage on it. The only battle damage on this regular toy is on his face. And I have to say, the paint apps on this guy is phenomenal. You've got weathering on the jacket. You've got all the, you know, the blood and the inner workings of the, you know, skeletal Terminator figure underneath. He comes also with a additional gun from the futuristic laser guns that they have. He comes with bullet holes and things in his jacket and stuff. If you flip it around the back, it is absolutely phenomenal. It's the only sort of modern version of the NECA, you know, toy centric ones I own, but he's, you know, standout, the best in my opinion. So I had to bring him in. He's just, perfect representation of Arnold Schwarzenegger from that movie. The head is dead accurate. And then to him wearing this bright pink shirt underneath, it's just hilarious.
Yeah, clearly what they've done, or what NECA has been doing, is a Terminator movie line.
Yes.
And then once they've, you know, they're through and they've done a few figures, they're like, how do we repaint this?
Yes.
Well, let's do a homage to the Kenner. And so it is deliberately, you know, leaning into the wackiness of that original figure. And I think it's a great blend between a movie accurate figure and a kind of a toy homage. So I have both of these in my collection.
Yes.
Both still carded, but I love them as well. I think they've done a great job. And what's really interesting, I mean, the kind of the stylistic version of the Kenner, the simplicity of the figure, but still the fact, you know, his face is melting apart, and there's that exoskeleton underneath. it had that kind of darkness to it as a kid, that kind of, you know, like, oh, this is kind of like from a really big film. They're kind of a bit violent, and it's kind of had that allure. Well, that's certainly how I remember looking at them in those Kenner brochures.
Oh, for sure.
I was drawn to it. And then to hold the Necker one, where they've notched it up in terms of, you know, the face, the skin is peeling away, and there's this layer of blood and you know, damage before you even get to the kind of exoskeleton. That is just so cool. Like, it's brilliantly brought to life. And what an amazing update.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so that was my call out. Every, you know, detail, paint app, every gun turret on this guy's, you know, gun belt is painted. It's just, it's a sight to see. Really, really cool. And well, and token to Necker's great job for doing it, whereas the Kenner one sort of, all, you know, from the belt down, it's all just pure black. There's no detail at all. But, you know, Necker's gone and painted zips in his boots and belt buckles and everything. They haven't just shied away from a, you know, direct, oh, we can get away with this. And I believe the card art and things is a homage to the original Kenner one.
Correct.
When you purchase
it. It's on a blister as well. It's got some of that original artwork because they had the little drawing of the character.
Right. Yeah.
So it's compressed because it's a bigger figure, right?
Yep.
But it's a very cool art. All right, I'm going to jump into another one that I've got here. Again, topical because Dune Part 2 is still in cinemas. I have Stilgar the Fremen from the LJN line to talk about first. And Stilgar, Dune was probably one of these lines that wasn't super popular, probably ended up on clearance pretty soon after. But it's got the Battlematic action feature here. So I've got in one hand his shovel. So he's got, like, obviously, you know, like a shovel for digging.
How do you make a shovel look futuristic? You put sides on it.
You put little, like, footrest things on it. It's pretty funny. And he's got his las gun as well. So these are very typical of an LJN style of figure. There he's got his Battlematic action. Look, it's pretty cool, but, you know, digging action features, not terribly exciting. He's, you know, like, the detail and the sculpt is there, but
it's
talking
just
about
all one color.
Yeah, talking about single color, he's about as boring as you can get.
Yes.
He's all brown pretty much, and he's got a rope for riding his sandworm friend, and that's sort of done in this pink color as well. So, you know, he's an interesting figure. I really like the line. He's probably one of the less interesting from that line. The line does have some really cool, like, Baron Harkonnen. Yeah. He's so big.
Yeah.
And the Sting character for Fade Rautha, I think there's just a lot of really good character in the sculpt. But then we move into...
Well, just on this character. Yeah. So he's quite tall, considering. Like, he's taller than Mike Kenner... Terminator.
Yeah, you'd
figure.
Put him probably close to the 6-inch mark, maybe 5.5.
What doesn't help is he's got brown hair and brown beard, and then a brown outfit.
Yep.
So he's washed out color. You know, it all just blends into everything. All you can see is the not even his whole hand. It's sort of from his knuckles down. You can see the hands because he's got gloves. You know, part of his suit, and then you can see his face, and that's it. That's a sort of only other colored differentials aside from these pink sandworm thing.
The rope.
Yeah, the rope. So he's all brown with black weapons, very washed out color. But, I mean, what do you expect from Dune? Like, it's a very color washed movie in general. But still, from a toy, you want something sparkling on the toy shelf. You want something eye catching.
Yeah.
A brown poo looking figure isn't going to be demanding, "Mum, let's grab that one and come home with me."
No, I think he would have been pig warming long into the desert night. Then we move on to McFarlane now, who has done the figures for the Dune film franchise. And, you know, I'd say that Todd's not necessarily the biggest parts reuse kind of guy, but unfortunately the Dune line has a lot of parts reuse. So here we've got Stilgar in his steel suit, but this applies to pretty much every character in this line. You've got a lot of the, you know, got Gurney Halleck and you know, a lot of the even Paul Atreides and Jessica are all in the steel suit. They've done kind of two different, the slender version and the more bulky kind of version. But here he is in, a very movie-accurate steel suit. Highly articulated. He's even got kind of toe articulation, yep. so yep. the toe can kind of move. Comes with a base, comes with his little knife. And one of the really cool things he's got is a breathing mask. So that's sort of like this rubber thing that can fit around. You can fit that onto him and put him into kind of like survival mode. And there he is. I think he's an interesting comparison to what NECA do. And probably what I would point out if you put him next to your power arm NECA Terminator, which is a figure that's, I'd say, 6 or 7 years older. The pain applications that NECA were doing back then, I think, are far superior, particularly when you look at the face. Like, his face is, they've chosen a really weird skin tone to start with, and it's very, very flat looking.
Yes.
Compare it to Schwarzenegger, where I think they've just done even a few different kind of maybe washes or a few different things that really make him look realistic, whereas the Stilgar almost looks kind of not quite real, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just look comparing the faces alone on Schwarzenegger and Stilgar. Schwarzenegger's definitely got more lines on his face, yep. and I'm not talking wrinkles because you know Schwarzenegger was at his peak, you know, yes. back in the 90s. So they've sculpted him at his peak, but just subtle lines, you know, like around the forehead and things like that. I can sort of see a little bit of a line, but they're more pronounced on Schwarzenegger's face and things, depth on the eyes and just little things like that. Definitely the skin choice yep. is a lot more realistic on the Schwarzenegger power arm version than the June one. Good highlight because I wouldn't have picked that up before.
There's something I find a little bit strange with the McFarlane proportions. And maybe having him next to kind of Schwarzenegger there, he probably stands half an inch taller, maybe 3/4 inch taller, but yet I think his head is it a similar size?
Yep.
It just feels like the head is a little bit small. I know it's a common complaint of a lot of the DC figures where they kind of suffer from small head syndrome. But yeah, I just feel there's something a little bit off with the proportions on him.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, this June figure's got a lot more paint apps and things. He's got wash, and he's got, whilst he's predominantly grey and light grey, there's a lot more subtle washes and things. So you can see the intricate details of this character versus his vintage counterpart. Articulation goes a long way as well. You can pose him in heaps of different poses. And the layers of his armour,
yep.
it helps flesh out the overall figure.
Yeah, what I like, what I'm noticing a lot more in sort of the modern figures, I'm historically a mint on card or mint in box type of collector, so I don't open everything I've got, but a lot of different materials are being used, right? So on Stilgar, and I'd be interested to know with the jacket, yeah, look, even on the Terminator, the use of the jacket, yeah. it's a soft material, right? Yeah. It's a rubbery material. Which is really cool. And same with Stilgar, like around his loin area, they've used this nice, you know, it doesn't hinder in terms of the sculpting, yeah. but it just lets you do the proper articulation to put a nice soft material there.
For allow him to sit down and all that sort of jazz as well.
Yep, yep. So I think they do a really good job of, you know, getting the right materials. Obviously here, you know, the June figures weren't super, super expensive. I think the McFarlane stuff is starting to go up in price now. He was very reasonable when he first started releasing his figures. But, you know, like butterfly joints on the arms, so you're getting a good range of motion there. All the double-jointed elbows and knees. The articulation, and look, his suit is very much, you can hide a lot of the articulation in there. But really good range of motion without getting in the way of the sculpt. So I think that's a really nice plus 100%. As well.
One of the cool things, I love a black light at home, using, you know, powering up my glow-in-the-dark toys and things. But what it also highlights is the different materials that are used. So yes. you might shine it on an all-red figure, let's say Clamp Champ. Not Clamp Champ. What's his name? Clawful.
Yep.
Clawful, which in our eyes is all predominantly red and orange.
Yep.
And you shine it on that, and the different materials on him shine different colours. And that's obviously, you know, the showcasing the different materials using some soft, some hard, some whatever. And I find that really interesting, really. It's worth noting that, you know, lots of toy lines do that to help their, you know, flesh out their toys for whatever reason. So, yeah, very, very nicely highlighted.
Yep. All right. Now, Scotty did bring in his choice. Ben, do you want to run through what
You're going to have Scott's? To help me. What's this is...
So, we got Ming the Merciless here from Defenders of the Earth.
And this was a Galoob line, correct?
It was Galoob, yeah. So, they put out, I think, six figures. Flash Gordon, Phantom, Mandrake. There was a Ming the Merciless and his friend Garrix, as well as the Caribbean ninja himself, Lothar. So this...
And the robot. What was the robot?
Yeah, Garrix. The robot friend with Ming's face emblazoned onto his chest, as you do for your boss. You know, come to work, you know, be the boss for a day. Well, put your boss's face on your chest day.
Yep. All right, so the Galoob figure, Scott, then we need to be very careful with what we say about this very cherished figure of Scott's. He has an action feature. You spin, I believe you twist the back of the action feature and his arms move around. So that's pretty cool. He comes with a little pink gun and a scepter.
Yeah, staff.
Like staff with a dragon head on it. Comes with a wicked big cape. That sort of very Dracula-esque that goes right up around the back of his head. Looks very cool. He's comes with quite a few different paint apps, even for such an old-school figure. But when in comparison to the McFarlane, is it?
That's a Necker, I Necker, think. Yeah,
right.
Necker.
The Necker Ming the Merciless that is obviously derived from, as well, from the toy line. Comparing the paint apps, it's just, you know, chalk and cheese.
Yes.
Like, the NECA one has gone to town. So where we see the Galoob one has some nice emblems and things on the front of the torso, the NECA one has gone, you know, leveled it up times seven. It's just fantastic. The Galoob one has a beautiful belt and with a few different sort of snake serpent color schemes, gold and blue around with a sort of a green star in the middle. And then the Necker one's just, you know, again, gone to town.
It's
on that.
Chance,
it's an extra addition. And then it's got a loincloth that falls down around the crutch. And that's sort of the his scepter, the picture of this dragon from his scepter, just, in, you know, showcasing his hiding his junk, which is fantastic. To the next level of the Necker one, you know, he's got like things like rings and things on his fingers. That's just not, you know, even thought about for the Galoob one. Beautiful color scheme. And we've got little, you know, beards and things for this character, which is nicely done for the Galoob.
Yep.
But then it's really, you know, embraced with the Necker one where it's, you know, separated and into three different... two different fall down bits and really menacing, I think. Different weapon here showcased. I'm not sure if the Necker one came with the gun and the scepter, but this Necker one has a sword.
Yeah, and it's interesting when we're talking about weapons, we go from, you know, what they did back in the day was very much, let's get a color plastic, call it red, and we'll just cast our, you know, weapons
single
in that
color.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
And I think there's a magical charm to that. Like, you know, they generally are colors that pop, particularly if you think back to the Turtles, even Master of the Universe. The color they choose in here on the Ming, they've chosen this nice kind of vibrant red. And I think that's very special. Obviously, then when you go to the Necker figure, the sword is realistically colored.
Yes.
Right. So one of the only companies that is kind of doing these modern figures but with homages to these plug plastics is Super 7 with their Turtles line. They do a lot of the, okay, you can have here's one version, which is just the plastic,
unpainted,
and here's a painted, more realistic version. But there is, I think that's super nostalgic to just have, you know, that's how they were all done pretty much at the time. And so it's interesting, like we sit there and we go, oh, isn't it great that these things are painted? I think there's a very special charm to the non-painted, simple weapon designs and casting, which I really like. But he is great. I mean, look at even the eyebrows on this, you know, the face detail. It's quite incredible what you can actually do at this scale in terms of the amount of detail you can put onto these things. And to contrast it back, you know, with a figure that's 30, 35 years older, the way that technology has changed to allow for this is quite incredible.
Yeah, and it goes without saying, you know, the original Galoob one has 5 points of articulation, maybe six if we're pushing the limits, and then the Necker one has, you know, 30 or something like ridiculous like that. Once you count all the arm swivels and wrist and neck and torso and
Well, Galoob, I think Galoob has the shoulder, the elbow and
neck. Yes, I forgot.
Which, you know, wasn't always done with figures of this era. So, you know, good on Galoob for doing something.
Well, not even the Kenner Terminator one. That's definitely 5 points of articulation.
Yep, that's a five pointer.
So, yeah.
Very nice. I like that. Mm. And I've got one last one, which I think we can touch on briefly. It's Lion-O through the ages.
Yep. From the Thundercats.
From Thundercats, from the LJN 80s figure, through to what Super 7 and Mattel have done with their Thundercats Classics line. But in the middle, I've got a third figure, which is Bandai's attempt at what they called Thundercats Classics. And this is actually the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive, which had a bit of additional paint applications.
So this is the peak.
This is the pinnacle.
Right.
This is the pinnacle of Thundercats.
Well, it's supposed to be anyway. Yeah.
Now, it's so funny to kind of look at this in retrospect. Ben, I think as you said, looking at these off air, we were so starved of Thundercats at this point.
Yep.
People like me were buying any shit that was being put out there, and this is quite literally the shit. It's a weird. Let's just go through how wacky this Bandai version is. First of all, they've done him in like an 8-inch scale. Yeah. This weird scale that no other figure really comes in.
Yeah. I distinctively remember reviews coming up of this Thundercats line, and people are trying to compare it with scales and things like.
Yep.
It doesn't scale with Marvel Legends. It doesn't scale with He-Man, which they were very disappointed with. Doesn't scale with Classics, which they were even more disappointed with. And they're just like, where does this scale? You know, they're creating their own scale, essentially. And people weren't happy. They want this universe of characters to fit amongst each other. And he's too lean to be that tall, almost.
The proportions aren't right on him. The paint apps on this version aren't right. They've also done they've added quite a bit of articulation to this figure. So he's got knee articulation, he's got ankle articulation, but they haven't done the joints in the blue.
Yeah, the ankle is the worst.
The ankle is like orange and the boot is blue. So you really see the joints. And then on top of it, the choice of the plastic looks just very cheap. He's got a lot of mismatching colors. So if you look at his, below his neck, right? Like, so the chest that's coming through the armor, it's not painted the right color. His face, it's like they printed the eyes on a bit wonkily. He's got the wrong sort of expression. It's just, there's nothing really compelling about this figure. And it was just the guise of a Classics line.
Yeah.
You know, I think I was just hoping that this thing would be better than what it looked like on photos. Yeah. You get it in hand, you realize you've got it. They phoned it in, and this thing, I was never satisfied with what this thing looked like.
Yep.
This
is an apparent where doing wash on a figure you can go too far. Yeah. You know.
Well, and that's the con exclusive. Yeah. So that's not. But it really doesn't work, does it? The wash is
especially when you look at the original and the Classics version, the wash is he's too orange. He's just too, you know, disjointed colors here and there. They don't line up with his muscles. It's a bit odd. The emblem looks amazing. Yep. That's probably the only saving grace on his belt.
Yeah.
I do like the sheen, the blue metallic armor.
It works on the armor.
Yeah.
Yep, it definitely works.
And the what do you call it? The claw arm.
Yep.
Extra. But that's about it. But I do love on the classics. It's a more natural looking fur claw, looking.
I love that look too. Yeah,
do like that. So, you know, even though it's cool to see a gold plated claw, I much prefer the more realistic bear claw, from that classics did.
Yeah, and what Mattel and Super 7 have given us is a line that scales with classics.
Yes,
right, yep. And that is really where Bandai should have been heading with this. Bandai had a real miss with their Thundercats kind of revival. They put out classics figures in various different scales.
Then they changed the sizing halfway through.
Changed the sizing partway through. They were doing also the TV show tie-in.
Yes, yep.
They did them in a kind of almost like a 3 3/4 inch scale as well. They had, I think, a 6-inch scale. There were just scales all over the place. I don't think they knew what they wanted to do from a consistency point of view. And I think if they had their time again, well, they would just do it in the classics scale, right?
Yeah, 100%.
We've learned the lesson. I really love the LJN. Again, there's a simplicity to the sculpt. And the colors really pop. Like Super 7 did a variation. The one that I've got from the modern era, mine's the Mattel version, but Super 7 almost re-released this Mattel version.
Yep, which is more cartoon, would you say?
It's more cartoon, yes, definitely. Yes. Yeah, definitely this is cartoon inspired. But what I think Super 7 did really well was they went back and did an LJN homage line.
Yes.
They changed the head on the lino and they painted him that bright orange. And actually, he looks amazing.
Yeah, I think you brought one of them to show and tell one time and we were all, you know, blown away by, oh, I didn't know I needed this. So yeah.
It is interesting because I distinctly remember at the time, quite often, you know, when Super 7 releases or Mattel release their new classics line, they have to make a decision, right? They have to go, you know, same with Shearer when they did Shearer in their classics. They made a very conscious decision to go, you know what, we're going to do this more like the cartoon and less like the toy. And Thundercats was very much in that vein of, okay, you guys want the cartoon, don't you? And for me at the time, it was very much like, yeah, that's what I want. I really want the cartoon likenesses. But then, you know, you've got this connection to the toy. And those toy versions are probably my favorite in that Thundercats line is that wave in the middle that just gave us.
Well, it's happening now with Turtles. You know, we never knew how much we wanted the original Playmates done up in a modern version. You know, how cool were those Super 7 versions of the original Turtles coming out? And now for them to pivot to, what are they doing next, 2012 or 2003, sorry.
Yep, yep.
2003, and they're not sure which way they're going. They're not sure if they've lost the rights or they've lost the Four Horsemen, you know, helping them. We're just unsure of which way the line goes. And I can't help but an outsider looking in because I'm not invested, you know, as tightly as Frank and yourself are. I just can't help but feel consistency is the best, you know. If we never get certain characters like General Trag and things, it'll be the biggest missed opportunity ever. You know, I feel sad. And they can do a General Trag in cartoon form and things, but it would never hit that.
Correct.
You know, that nostalgic button that we all want. You know, until they get to it. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. So, very cool.
Nice. Very good. All right. We're going to jump into our next segment, which is a review of X-Men 97. And this got a lot of interest.
Yep. First two episodes dropped in just the other week, and we're not going to talk about the third episode. So
okay.
Yep. So because only two, yeah. So, what did you think? Were you first day, you know, tuning in or...?
Yeah, look, it was an interesting dynamic because there's a number of shows I want to watch at the moment.
Of course.
Shogun is a big one.
Yes, I'm a couple episodes in on that, and I've sort of, because it's a weekly release, I'm like, oh, I want to watch the next episode now. You know, I've got to wait. So
yeah, I had that, and I also want to watch the new Avatar: The Last Airbender with the kids. I'm keen to watch that. So when you said, hey, let's watch this, I was a bit like, oh, it's not top of my list right. of things okay. I want to watch.
Yep. Yep.
So I think I watched episode one last night,
yes.
and then episode two I've watched today.
Cool.
And I must admit, some of my thoughts from the trailer came through
yes.
when watching it. The first thing I have to say, I don't know if I'm the only person that's thinking this way. I'm finding the animation style a little bit off-putting.
Okay, right? In what sense?
So, you know, there's a show called Archer.
Yes, right? Yes.
And it's animated in a style, like you can tell it's done in a computer.
Yes.
You can tell it's kind of like done in a comic book style.
Yes.
And it's almost looks a bit flat.
Right.
I felt that this just had a sort of a flatness okay. or a kind of,
yep.
you could tell they were all kind of like done in a computer and it kind of almost yeah. lacked the hand-drawn
yes, of
nature,
course, yeah.
right?
For me, I felt a little bit that, but it was for me, it was too clean.
Yes,
it
too
was,
clean.
It
yes.
was too clean.
Too clean.
I needed that grittiness of maybe the hand-drawn, the, yes. the minor defects, the, you know, oh, without even picking up on it, you know, Wolverine's shoulder might not level up or something.
Yeah.
You know, just that in that one scene and then you've forgotten it by the next. So if even in the trailers, it looked a little bit too clean
yes.
and rolling in. But I have to say, once I got into the storyline, yep. I forgot about it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I agree 100%. So, but for me, it just it takes me out a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's a good way to explain it. Too clean. It almost, you know, like looks like this is not the right description, but like Microsoft Paint. You know, like it's done, you know, in a computer, yes, and it yes. just looks. It looks computer done.
Yes. Bit too much generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a minor gripe. Right. Otherwise, like, I love the style. Yes. You know, it's got the X-Men 93.
Well, it's a direct. 92. You know, they've taken what was worked in, you know, call it 96 or the mid 90s
yep.
X-Men, and they've just transitioned that beautifully
correct.
Into this.
Yeah.
And all the costumes are the same, all the animation, all the even bringing back some of the old, you know, mutants and things yep. like the ones that live in the sewers and stuff. I'd never expected to see them again. And yet, bang, there they are in second episode or whatever. It was just
yep.
very surprising to, but wow, they're hitting those deep cuts already.
Yes.
That was really cool.
Yeah. So. My other criticism is probably just some of the voice casting.
Okay.
I felt again this in the trailer that they've recast or they yes. sort of used a lot of the old actors.
Yes.
And I felt they felt maybe
aged.
Old. They felt
yes,
aged.
Yes.
Right.
Any particular character? Because I've got one in my mind.
Well, I found the Storm voice.
Okay.
A little bit. And you know, unsettling.
Yep.
I thought Cyclops is brilliant.
Yep.
I think Cyclops does, and I think it is a younger actor.
Right. Right. For me, it was Rogue. Rogue felt a bit like even her full-on Southern accent and things. When we've got to know Rogue and stuff, it just came off a bit like I have to put this voice on.
Yes.
A little bit. And but still, it was, you know, again, look, once I was halfway through the episode, I forgot. You know, I tried to tune it out.
That's fine. Yeah. These are minor gripes for me. They're things I noticed in the trailer that
yep.
that have flowed through. It's sort of one of these things. I'm going, okay, well, I'll play it out and
yep.
let's see. Yeah, like I think for me, Storm, Rogue, even Magneto doesn't sound
okay.
quite right,
right
to me, and. The Wolverine's a little bit hit and miss. I love Cyclops. I think Cyclops yep. sounds great.
You can see why he's a leader. I felt like
yeah.
that, like you felt a sort of what's the word respect
yes.
for him. You
yep.
know, and that's beautiful storytelling as well. But I felt that, you know, yep, he's the leader because of X, Y, and Z,
yes.
you know, and because of what he's doing, because he's sacrifices, because all that sort of stuff. So.
Oh, definitely. Mm. And he's thinking about what's best for the team.
Yes,
and,
yes.
and, you know, obviously he's got a child on the way.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's an interesting, the characters seem very rounded. Mm. You know, they've got issues. I think X-Men's always done that very well. I do like the Magneto arc that, you know.
You like the Rogue and Magneto arc, do you? No, that's what you just said.
No. I found that odd and unsettling. I like the arc where he's taken over the school.
Yes.
And he is trying to
prove himself.
Yeah, but to honor what Xavier's wishes were and really try to redeem and try and get humanity to work with the mutants. And episode two sort of starts with him saving the humans. Yeah. You know, like there he is saving this little kid from a metal induced accident that's theme park related. So I think where this really does well is in the maturity of the storyline, the arcs and the themes that it's going through. It feels realistic and it feels robust, and they're putting characters through these interesting scenarios. We've got the issue with Storm and what's happened to her.
Yes.
The attack on kind of the Congress as they're, you know, Magneto's put his hands up and said, I'm open to being tried, and this is the best way to prove that I'm trying to do the right thing. And, you know, he steps in and helps out the humans to kind of prove himself. So I'm really enjoying that arc. I'm really enjoying kind of, you know, the new characters they're introducing and like the threat of these kind of like, you know,
executioner.
And kind of how they've got this kind of old Sentinel tech and then Trask is there and he's sort of got this Sentinel graveyard. The action sequences are really cool. There was a really, again, just with that uncanny valley that I found some of the animation, really cool dance sequence with like Jubilee on the dance floor. Yeah. And so, yeah, like I think the strength in this is certainly the character development and the story they're putting forward. It ended very much on a cliffhanger episode two with an arrival of a character that, you know, you're like, what is going on here? Mm. Is there some sort of time travel? Is there some sort of shape-shifting going on? What is the deal? And I did like the diversity of kind of character types as well.
Yeah.
So you've got Morph and he's kind of a bit of the comic relief, and then you've got the serious characters like Wolverine. The leader characters, the vulnerable characters. Yep. It was a really good mix, and I think it's off to a really strong start.
Yeah. What I loved about the X-Men, and this goes back to the original one as well, they hit the ground running. There was no big, you know, whole episode of, okay, this is who's who.
Yep.
This is, you know, they were just bang, here it is, you know.
Yeah,
established group. You should know who we are.
Yep.
Here we are, you know, and they're just not force feeding you what everyone's powers are and everything. They just bam, straight into it and hit the ground running. And I love that about it. You know, no explanation of why they're wearing the costumes, you know, no big funeral scene of Charles Xavier, but definitely, you know, hinted at, you know, he's passed away and things. The big Logan, you know, very concerned about Jean and things. I'm a bit iffy about the Rogue and Magneto. I'm not sure if I'm a fan of that that story arc, but we'll see where that plays along. I just think, you know, he's a bit old for her, but, you know, who am I to judge? And there's just probably my only concern, and maybe it's because I haven't watched the old 90s X-Men sequential to watching the new one quickly enough, is characters like Morph can take on their the other mutants' abilities. So he becomes Archangel, is it?
Yep.
And he can fly and things like that. He can Sabretooth. I like that, you know, just to have a beer with Logan, so they're sort of best mates. It becomes the Psylocke. Yeah, that was cool. But can he then do Psylocke's powers?
Yeah,
and
that's the bit I'm not sure. Yeah. I thought it was more an imitation power.
Yeah, but when he turned into Angel and flew, I'm like, oh, so he
can... Well, that kind of makes sense. I mean, if you can morph wings, they would work.
Right.
But can you... You know, if he morphed into Cyclops, could he do the laser blast? I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think it gives him the ability to replicate all the powers. But maybe he evolved during. I'm not sure. Sorry, the other call out is Beast. I think Beast is great. I think the voiced is excellent. And he's a really interesting character because he's that dichotomy of being so grotesque and evil looking, and he's such an intellect.
Yeah.
And he had a few really, really cool scenes, I thought. Mm. I've always liked Beast as a character.
Yep. Yeah. So my other call out was that I don't understand the whole lore of X-Men, but Rogue can just take off her gloves and touch someone and absorb, like, let's say, a doctor. You know, let's change the subject here. I need to fly a plane, for instance. I'm going to touch this pilot who's a naughty boy, so we can't have him fly the plane. I'm going to touch this pilot. Oh, bam, I've got pilot abilities now, and I can fly a plane.
Yeah, look, I thought that's not how that worked generally. Like, I thought she kind of absorbed a bit of a... it felt a bit, oh, Matrix. Hey, we need the download for this helicopter thing. Yep. Download it into me.
Yeah.
It's a sort of, I don't know. It's a bit of a cheap power maybe is a bit overpowered, and it's probably not how that would work in sort of reality. But yeah, it made for an interesting sequence, I think. I think like that sequence is kind of like quite interesting because the doctor, when Jean's giving birth, the doctors are like, well, we don't want to treat you.
Yes.
Because we don't know how this is going to play out. And, you know, the medical insurance. But he was a
bit, dare I say, racist against the X-Men. So, against mutants.
Yes.
So that's the whole half the story arc is they're battling against these racist community that don't like, think mutants are going to take over the whole scene and humanity. Pure humanity won't exist after a while.
Yeah,
so.
I felt it was an interesting choice because it wasn't him being completely... There was sort of like a logic to...
Yep.
Well, when we do a C-section, when we can't, we don't know what's going to happen. But they did kind of play it a bit more on this guy's evil.
Yes.
He's being a bit of a baddie. But if you were really having a baby, you would have had your obstetrician appointments and you'd be worked out. Yeah. You wouldn't just run in and go, deliver my baby now. But anyway, it was an interesting little play on that kind of the racism or the feeling humanity has against these people, which I think is a really critical theme of the show.
100%. So you're hyped, you're gonna keep watching.
I'm enjoying it. Without a doubt I'll watch this through. It probably hasn't captured me like my favorite tier of shows.
Yep.
But it's probably not far behind, if that makes sense. If the animation had been maybe a bit more to my liking, it might have just eased me in and got me hooked a little bit quicker. But I'm in on the show.
Excellent. Okay, cool. I've got the episode titles for the rest of the season, so block your ears if you don't want to hear it. So Remember It is episode 3. Life, Death, Part 2 is episode 4. Bright Eyes, and then Tolerance is Extinction, Part 1, and then Tolerance is Extinction, Part 2. Tolerance is Extinction, Part 3, and that's the season finale. So we wrap up. It's a weekly episodic format, obviously. That new character who with the solar powers.
Oh, yes, in the episode one, the rich kid.
Yeah, yeah. So he's a mainstay character as far as I'm aware. He's on the poster and things of the 97. So I believe we're going to watch him evolution through the series.
Yep.
What's that, 8 episodes or so? I think we're off to a flying start, and I'm really liking what I'm seeing so far. And as much as I want to binge watch the whole series and things, I do like the episodic.
Spacing it out. I do like that too, yeah.
Time to consume. It stops all the, what's it called, the spoilers and things.
Yeah.
The too far in advance spoilers and stuff. So I appreciate that. I think they've nailed the Hulk. Characteristics of the characters. They're beautifully transitioned.
Yeah.
I just hope that the Marvel Cinematic Universe now picks up the X-Men and does something after Deadpool. This is the only future I see for Marvel Universe, bar having a fairly decent break. You know, we've got Fantastic Four and things on the scene. I'm sure Scotty's sick of, you know, us berating him about that and the actors and things. X-Men has to be, you know, the next phase for the cinematic universe.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more. One shout out, which I think was spine tingling goosebump moment, was the intro.
Yeah.
And the music.
Did you feel it was a little bit sped up, a little bit more, you know, racy? I felt it had a bit more boost to it.
But it was, I mean, the intro felt almost like a cut, copy, paste of the original, right? Yeah. Like in terms of the sequence of them running together and almost just imploding into each other.
It's like Peacemaker. I am never going to skip this intro. I am just going to watch it till the end and just kick on. And I love at the end as well how they've got the characteristics.
Like the end of the show, they've refined that very dodgy 3D image that they had. And it is animated really nicely. Yeah. I thought that was very, very cool. Loved it.
Nice. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Good one. Well, we're at time, so we've done it. So hopefully, is Frank's not back for our next recording?
But so Scotty will be. Scotty's all good. He just had to stay away for this episode, unfortunately. You know, he's got family come first.
Yep.
So all's good in the Scott Menheminet household now, and he'll be back, I'm sure, next episode. So, yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in to another episode of Toy Power, and to all our patrons, thank you so much for your ongoing support and chatter on the Discord. Stay safe, everyone. Take care of one another, and we will see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time. Good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.